My name is Jan Delmanowicz. I'm a .NET developer and system architect, and for the last 5 years I've been specializing in designing and developing applications for SharePoint. But don't worry, there won't be much of a SharePoint today. I work for Roche. Roche is one of the largest pharmaceutical and biotech companies in the world. You probably won't find our drugs in local drugstores. They are mainly available in hospitals. But in Poland, Roche has a huge shared services center when around 1,700 IT specialists develop all kinds of software required for Roche internal needs. We do not sell software. Today, we're going to be talking about geographically distributing system. I've spent last 3 years building such a product, and I would like to walk you through our use case and see what sort of pitfalls you can fall into and when you would really like to build one. Because not in all cases you'll need one. So we'll start from introducing to our use case. We will see why we needed to geographically distribute the system. Then we'll go through scenarios which we took into account when designing the architecture. What were their strong sides and the weaknesses? At the end, I will talk a little bit about the pitfalls that we fall into, and which by attending this session, I hope you will be able to avoid. So let's start. What is geographically distributed system? It's a system who has components split into multiple computers, which are geographically located in a separate locations. So the definition is very simple. And those all components should appear to end user as a coherent system. So a good example of such system would be a Gmail or Amazon Web Services. When you log into a portal, they have, and you see only a web page, but they have data centers located all over the world. And you don't see the connections between them. So, and once you decide to build a distributed system, you may expect at least two things. One, your life as the developer will get complicated, and two, the cost will increase. So if it's so hard to build a distributed system, why we should spend time and invest money on building one? So there would be at least two reasons why we might want to look into it. One would be safety or availability. Depending on how critical the system is for your business needs, it might be good reason to have a backups or failover servers located in separate location. You might say, I have a backups and failover servers in the same data center, and in most of the cases, it might work perfectly fine for you. But in case of a natural cataclysm or a nuclear attack or even a huge blackout in the area, when your data center goes down, you might be in a big, big troubles. So that's the first reason. Now let's talk a little bit about the second one. Performance improvement. Because in our case, that was the main reason why we decided to do one. Our goal was to build a platform which would replace all intranets available within our company, intranet portals, and be a host, provide a common environment which would give the communication department control over this environment. By intranet portal, I mean a website which has lots of publishing pages, organized in some structure, and also document libraries. Each portal, many of our departments in our organization have its own, have its own website where they could describe what they do for a living, how to contact them, who they work for, and have lots of documents and procedures where you can list. Also, there are many projects within the company. which want to have its own website. We have lots of services. For example, if you want to order a new laptop, company phone, just go to the service website and see how you can get one. Currently, those portals were spread across four different platforms. Each platform was developed by individual teams, so it was hard to control. Quite expensive to maintain. So we had to build a new platform. And we are talking about migrating about 500 portals into the new platform, which in total take up to 2 terabytes of data and are used by more than 80,000 users spread all over the world. The easiest solution would be to build an application and put it in one data center, and from where users could use it. But very soon we found out that users located in other regions of the world would complain about the performance. Why? Because from Basel, where our headquarters is located, to Singapore, it is 10,000 kilometers. And a single round trip for the ping takes around 350 milliseconds, which is 7 times more than for the same ping within the Europe. So, but it's worth to know that to download a page or load a page, browser may need to download 1 megabyte of data or even more, and it needs to send 100 requests, around 100 requests. Modern browser can handle from 6 to 8 requests in parallel. So to download, to send 100 requests, we need at least 13 round trips. 13 round trips by 350 milliseconds is already almost five seconds. And that's only for empty packets, if we need to download the 1 megabyte. Now, we're used to have local area networks, very fast, gigabit Ethernet, 10 gigabit Ethernet. But the reality on cross-regional links, it's like in the 90s. Although the links might be fast, but they are very busy. There are not so many of them. And so you want to minimize the amount of data being sent. To download 1 megabyte over such a long whole link would take significantly more time. So we knew we want to keep the data close to the user and minimize cross-regional calls. Microsoft, for example, because of the same issues for Azure, builds its own backbone to connect the data centers and be able to replicate the data fast. But there are huge money involved in it. So we started looking, what kind of solution, what sort of architecture we could use? The simplest one would be to use master-slave solution, where one server allows modification of the data and the other three located in other regions could serve the data in read-only mode. Could it work for us? Probably yes, because one intranet users, or when user go to a website, most of what he does it is just reading, he needs to read the latest news, find some documents. So in our case, that could work. But still, we have significantly less number of content editors, but they are still spread around the world. So for them, that would be poor experience. And there was also another reason. For publishing portals, lots of requirements regarding publishing portals and our system are already available in content management systems. So we thought there was no reason to build all that functionality from scratch. So maybe we could choose existing platform and just to adapt it to our needs. We chose SharePoint. SharePoint, because we had already available licenses within the company, we had development skills, and the end users knew it. But when you choose existing products, it comes with limitations. In this case, SharePoint doesn't support replication of its content databases. So we couldn't just replicate the content. We kept looking. So maybe we could, instead of creating, replicating the data, maybe we could create four separate instances of the application and try to split the content between of them. When we looked into this, then we found out that for each individual portal, their users were located within the same region. So we could choose where it could be located. For example, in our case, we have in Polish department, we have our own website, and all users are mainly located in Poland. And no one from US probably wants to look into it. And we have local service desk. It has also its own portal. It's also located in Poland, because in Basel, there is another service desk. So we thought maybe we could use this architecture. And one of the requirements was that because there are lots, so many portals, we should provide a catalog of data so that users could go there and find what information there are available, what services there are, maybe, and mark them as favorite. They could filter it. And in this setup, we didn't have this information on any of the platform. Because here, we required some metadata, which could allow us to build the portal, because as we remembered, the content was split. Then we quickly looked into multi-master scenario. And in multi-master scenario, for end users, it's really nice experience, because they can edit the content in whichever location they want. But it's much harder to build such system. When someone modifies data into different data centers, then you need to decide, you will get conflicts. Some of the databases already allow have mechanisms for replication in bidirectional replication and set up multi-master scenario. So they can solve it, but we couldn't use the replication as I because of the SharePoint limitations. If you would like to build your own solution, for example, you have specific needs, you might probably want to look into one of those two protocols. These are the most two common protocols for solving multi-master, for implementing multi-master scenarios. One is two-phase commit, which is pretty simple to explain. In each transaction, let's say, we have an organizer or coordinator role who proposes a change and sends the request to all the servers in the cohort. And he needs waits for two sorts of replies, accept whether or reject. Only in case all servers accept the transaction, then he sends another message to commit it. And in all other cases, he aborts the transaction. So, but this protocol can lead to a deadlock, because when acceptor accepts the transaction, sends the message that he accepts, he logs the records. He logs the records which take part in the transaction. So, and at this point the coordinator goes down. The records are still blocked. But there's another protocol, which is Paxos. It was published by Leslie Lamport in 1989. It has very large variations. It's much more complex, but it allows it's fault tolerant, which means that not all servers have to be online all the time. It's enough that only more than half of them is up and running. And both protocols offer strong data consistency, which means that by the end of the transaction, the data is modified in all data centers. here's a nice table comparing the methods of replication that we talked so far. So what is this is taken from one of the presentations from Google I/O events. Here is the link to the presentation if you are interested. And what is very important, so there is no single method that solves all your problems. You always need to go on to compromise. So, but let's get back to our scenario. We wanted to somehow, we have four isolated instances of applications, but we wanted to gather the metadata. We didn't need to copy over whole content of the applications. We only needed to build the catalogs. We only needed some information like title, name, description, maybe picture, and some of them in what languages it is available in, what is the target audience for it. So we thought, maybe instead of replicating the data, maybe we could use search engine. SharePoint offers, we already had on place that mechanism because it's built in into SharePoint. So we thought, on each data center, set up a crawl, which would crawl all the farms. It didn't need to crawl whole content, but only the parts where the metadata were located. So by this, we reduced amount of time needed for incremental crawls and also amount of data being sent over the long hauls. And we ended up with the in each data center index with a whole bunch of metadata required to build the catalogs. But in reality, it occurred that search wasn't performing fast enough. Single query to the search engine lasted 350 milliseconds. And Microsoft says, hey, build search-driven applications. But it doesn't say you that you should limit the number of queries to the search. So in case you need more queries than one to build, to gather, collect all the data, for us it was too slow. So we came up with idea, maybe we should build an in-memory cache, which would asynchronously, in the background, pull all the metadata from the search, and we could build the kind of small DB in memory with indices for entities of each time, and which we could query. So we build it the way that the catalogs do not know that the cache exists. They send the query in form of queries to SQL, and on the fly, we translate them into link expressions, which are executed against in-memory cache. If the data is not there, then the queries go straight to search. But there was one problem still when, for the first load of the application, to load the cache, it took a long time to pull all the data from cache. Because now we needed for all the data for all the catalogs. So what we did to improve even the performance, we serialize, once the cache is built, we serialize it and keep it stored locally. So on the start, when application starts for the first time, we just grab the snapshot of the cache and load it and so that we can quickly serve the data to the user. I know the data might be a bit outdated, but still maybe end user doesn't even care about this one little service or new one intranet which appeared there. The data will be refreshed maybe when he refreshes the page. So that was our solution, which improved the user experience a lot. And there is a nice story, because just shortly before going live, we had a user experience, user acceptance test. And the customer did us, without telling us, wanted to test the performance. So he organized 150 end users and gave them exact links where they should click and synchronize them over the WebEx teleconference. So on the comment, they should hit the button and click into URL. When we heard of it for the first time, we got scared Because when we analyzed the log, on the average, we had 2.5, maybe up to 3 requests per second to the servers. Now we customer generated 150 requests at the same time. To our surprise, the system was performing really good. There were only 2 URLs that were performing bad, and both of them were leading to external systems, because in the system we had a link to also the external systems, and the customer just didn't notice that he chose for the test one of the URLs that was leading to external systems. And those systems were performing much slower. Content of the publishing pages is one type of content. To build the catalogs, we also needed taxonomies. By taxonomies, I mean all kinds of dictionaries that help to build and organize the content. For example, list of countries, list of locations, list of languages that we support, a structure of 20,000 departments available within our company. So some of those information is maintained manually, some of it is downloaded or synchronized out with external systems, but we store it centrally. And we keep it in SQL database. So for this mechanism, we used SQL data replications, built-in mechanism into SQL Server, which is very reliable and fast. The information is replicated within seconds. And for us, this worked really well. Apart from taxonomy and content and metadata, we also had user profiles. Because when user marks, for example, service or intranet portal as his favorite, we needed a place where we could keep it, store this information. Also, in user profiles, from user profiles, we use the information about location of the user, country location, department, preferred language, for example. And using this information, we can provide suggestions which services can be interesting for the user based on geographical locations. As I mentioned, each intranet has built-in fields where you can specify target audience. So you can specify that this portal might be interesting for the users from US which work in this department. The mechanism was very flexible. So coming back to the user profiles. For user profiles, in each data center, the profiles were stored, but they were also spread. So that, for example, for me, I had a home data center, which in Europe, and only when I modify the data in Western Europe, the data gets modified and spread to other, replicated to other regions. But for my friend George, maybe, who works in US, his home farm was in US. So when I, for example, if I modify the data in Shanghai, then it won't get replicated because it's only master slave replication. But for each user has his own farm dedicated. And for this, we use user profile replication engine, a little crappy piece of software from Microsoft, which happens to end in a deadlock and needs to be restarted from time to time. But overall, it works. To sum up this point, part of presentation, the key decision that had impact on the performance of our system was to keep the data close to the users and limit the number of the long haul requests. We used search engine for replication. We use search engine. We use SQL data, transactional replication, and user profile replication. And to improve the performance even more, we built in-memory cache. Now let's talk a little bit about possible pitfalls. One of it might be deployment. After all, as you could see, when building geographically distributed system, you end up in many components, and those are located in many locations. So, for example, I counted about, you need to set up all those components. I counted about 30 steps that need to be executed to set up the application correctly. And it's only on one server. If it takes 2 minutes, sometimes it takes more, then we have 1 hour. But in production, to have failover and be able to serve more users, we don't have, instead of having one server, we have 10 of them. We remember we are building geographically distributed system, so now we are talking about 4 data centers. And this is only production environment. We have also pre-prod. Then we have to, where we test the software. Also we have sandpit environments and dev environments. And to be able to maintain the application, the version which is currently deployed to production while working on the new version, we also wanted to duplicate the dev and sandpit environments. In total, I counted 85 servers where we deployed this, our application to. And our first deployment, when we end up to the pre-prod servers, I probably shouldn't be saying that, but was a disaster. It lasted 7 consecutive days. I felt like working on a production line, something like that. But really, it's not my favorite kind of spending free time. I prefer to be one of the on those 4 seats. So very soon, when we finished it, we knew we had to change it. So we organized a brainstorming. Maybe it wasn't a very all brand new ideas, but we had to implement it. So we came up with the idea we should create a package which would all steps, all those 30 steps, configuration steps, should be included in it and should appear to end user as a black box with 3 big buttons: install, upgrade, and uninstall. All configuration required for the package shouldn't be contained within the package, but should be separately stored in a file on each server where the package will know where to look for it. So the package, you could take the package and deploy it on any server you like. Having such solution, all it took was just to copy the package to the server and hit button install or upgrade. So for us, it was huge improvement. We organized it as all those 30 actions, besides deploying the binaries of the application. So each of this configuration item we organized as a separate PowerShell script, and we had in the installation package hooks as a pre-install and post-install, because some of the actions you do before you install, some of them as after you install the application. And that was really big improvement for us. But then, even if it takes, deployment takes, for example, you hit the button to wait for 30 minutes or 15 minutes, but sometimes it happened that just in the middle, deployment failed because something was not configured well on the server or some of the prerequisite packages weren't installed there. So we thought that maybe we could introduce another step to verify the environment before we even start the deployment, so that we crash early, as early as possible. Because if you end up in the middle of deployment, sometimes it's not so easy to start it over from the point that you wanted it. And you need to roll back and to upgrade again. And those scripts for checking environment before we start the installation also saved us a lot of time, many times. Especially in pre-prod and prod environments where we do not have access to. We only need to pass the package to our admins and give them the installation manual. Not the installation manual is pretty simple. Copy the package, hit install or upgrade. Once we have the package and on our development environment, when we have total control over, we hooked it up into our continuous integration environment. We use Bamboo from the Atlassian tool stack. So we have four deployment for each of our environment. We have separate plan where you just each night the code is automatically deployed to the servers. So each morning we have fresh code and testers can test it. And whenever there is a need to deploy it multiple times a day, all a developer or a tester needs to do is come here and press one of those buttons. Deployment lasts 10 or 15 seconds, and I really recommend it so that you can do something like that. There is also a nice tool, Octopus Deploy. You might want to look into it. Maybe we'll also have, we didn't try it yet, but what I read, it's very popular. Now let's talk about another pitfall, which is latency. Because when we are talking about the software geographically distributed systems, we need to synchronize the data. And the synchronization takes time. Sometimes it's seconds, sometimes it's minutes, sometimes it's hour. In our case, for example, from the time where we create a new intranet portal within one of the data centers, it takes about 30 minutes until it appears in the catalogs. Because we have incremental crawls running every 15 minutes, for example, and then it's up to 10 minutes for the in-memory cache to get refreshed. But we knew it, we informed the customer, and for them, it was okay. For the content owner can create it and work it locally on this farm where he creates the content all the time. But until it appears in the catalog, it takes 30 minutes, and we can leave it. But it's important to take those considerations into account when building a system. The same is, for example, about in favorites. If I'm on my home farm and I mark a service as favorite, then it's already in favorites instantly. And the information will be replicated to other data centers within minutes, or every 5 seconds the user profile replication engine checks it and processes all the pending changes. So after 10 or 15 seconds, this information should be located in separate farm. But if I quickly click on the intranet or switch to remote location, then I might not find this service in my favorites. But hopefully, there are not many cases when it happens. The most critical, I think, scenario is when user is working, operating, not on his home farm, but on remote farm, and clicks marks as favorite, because we send the data mark as favorite, we need to modify it in his home farm, home data center, and then wait until the information is replicated back. So to improve the user experience, what we do, we modify in home data center, but we also modify this information locally, just on this farm where he is located, so he can have this information marked as favorite instantly. This information will get overridden in seconds, but it will be the same. The only scenario which we do not cover is that, for example, if I'm in one remote center, data center, I mark as favorite, and instantly switch to another data center, which is also remote. Then the information, we need to wait there for the information to replicate. And that's about latency. Now, let's talk a little bit about the fault tolerance. We have lots of components talking to each other, most of them in the backbone, on the backend side. And you want to make them as asynchronous as possible. Because you don't want to have user wait when you click on something to make a cross-regional calls to other data centers, gather the information, collect the information from there, and ask user to wait until you display it. There are many things that can go wrong in the middle, and if a connection is down, then the users might wait for a long time, or you have to present the exception. So for example, if you have a Dilbert, which is one of the most popular widgets in the intranet portal, just to present the Dilbert comics, we get the information from the external system, but we don't want to load it synchronously from the external system, because if we lose the connection to the system, users wouldn't see it. So what we do, we just cache the information we on the backend download each day. We download the new Dilbert and store it locally, so we can serve the data locally or even the snapshot of the data. And when the connection to the remote systems is back, then we can refresh it. To wrap up, there is no single solution or architecture that would fit any even two different systems. You always need to adjust your or create, build the architecture to adjust it to your requirements and to the environment that you are working in and the components that you have available. Because whenever you use any tool, it might come with restrictions. The system that we built works fine from, I think, 1 year and a half. And it won two prizes on the Intranet Reloaded conference in spring this year. So I hope in a nutshell, I was able to present you some of the pitfalls that you might run into while building geographically distributed system. And you will, especially you need to automate everything. Everything that's possible, just start from the scratch. Tomorrow will be a nice session from Kuba Gutkowski about the deployment. And if you're interested in this topic, just please visit this you must see his presentation. So that's it from my side for today. If you have any questions, I'll be here for around. For some time, you can also find me in our stand. So thank you.